The following program is rated M16+. Parental guidance recommended.
DRN1, supporting local artists from day one.
Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening into DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show. And today I have Grant Machette, who is a local comedian in Perth. Hi, Grant.
Hi there.
How are you?
Excellent. You?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Local comedian.
I know.
Wally Wade.
Was that like a bit of a poor intro?
You could have said, yeah, it was.
All right. Well, how would you do it?
I would have been like absolute legend of Osborne Park. Grant Machette.
You could have said Northbridge.
Northbridge. Yeah. True.
You know.
You'll find me in an alleyway in Northbridge most Saturday nights.
It's the biggest venue. Well, the venue that I most attribute looking like an airplane.
Oh, yeah, true. It does look like an airplane, eh?
Yeah.
Three seats on one side, three seats on the other.
Yeah, so people have got some scope here. This, we're talking about the craft. And, you walk in and you actually do feel like you're about to be seated in a plane.
Yeah, and then you get someone coming up and telling you the rules. And
yeah, there's an usher.
There's an usher. There's a curtain where all the people behind that curtain are drinking.
Yeah, the pilots. Grant, what brought you to comedy?
I don't know. I used to be a lot funnier in person, eh? I used to be a funny person to be around, and then I started doing comedy, and now I feel like less funny off stage and more funny on stage. But yeah, my friend signed me up to an open mic night in Edinburgh in Scotland called Red Raw, and that's like, I don't know, it's like the best. It's like 100 people, maybe 150, and it's just packed into a little like low ceiling, dark underground sort of basement in Edinburgh on, I think it's York Street. And then, yeah, I did my first 5 minutes all and fully in a suit, all doing one-liners. And, it went really well, eh? It was crazy. I was on the lineup with, I don't know if you know, the Scottish comedian Frankie Boyle. He was on the lineup and he's like massive, like live at the Apollo and Mock the Week and all that. So, yeah, it was like first gig, just backstage fanboying.
I actually sit on the edge of my seat when you talk about Edinburgh because my mum's from there.
Oh, yeah?
And I've never been, which is terrible.
Oh, really?
And I'm not sure through all this COVID stuff I'm ever going to get to now.
Yeah, that's true. I've kind of written my whole family off.
it's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I always remember in one of your sets you talked about the Scottish emblem, I think it is. The
animal.
Yes. And I didn't even know that. So when my grandma turned 90, I got her like this big, massive blow-up unicorn. And she thought I was the weirdest person in the world.
Yeah, did she even know that?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming she did. She grew up there and, you know, lived there all her life until she migrated over here.
Yeah, right. So, I don't know how many people would know that the Scottish national animal is a unicorn.
You'd hope someone that was born there might, but, and lived there for many years.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the national animal of Australia?
Isn't it like our kangaroo and our emu?
So you got two?
Yeah.
Ah.
I think, yeah.
Cool.
How about that? I would fail migration test.
They can't go backwards, isn't that the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for the, apparently, you know, the treasury in, no, the post office in Perth has one of them facing the wrong way, and that was because an artist was really upset because treasury cut their money.
Oh,
and
really?
So he faced one in the wrong way facing towards treasury. Yeah, have just a look.
Say screw you guys.
Yeah, and they never changed it. How cool is that?
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, my grandma thought it was a bit weird and, you know, getting
blow up unicorns.
Yeah, but I learned that from you. So I was like, yeah.
Educating the masses.
I know. So when did you come to Australia then?
May 2015, I came to Australia.
Yeah.
Moved to Perth, moved to Rockingham for a bit. And then where did I go? I went to Melbourne for like, I was in Melbourne like all up. I've been in Melbourne for like a year.
Yeah.
But I lived like way out kind of in the country when I was there, just working and fly fishing, really. That's all I was doing. Not really going to the city much. And then, yeah, came back, been in Perth, went to like Canning Vale and Subiaco, and now I'm in Osborne Park. Working my way up. Geez, I've been Hillary's next, I reckon. It's been good. I'm like a citizen now. Such a stress, eh? Like, such a stress going from a holiday visa to a permanent residency visa to whatever it is, a skilled visa, and then yeah, you get your citizenship, and it took like 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, and you're over it by that point, you know, and then you're stressed all the time because like you don't know if you're going to get to stay here, or you can't really look for other jobs, or you can't move because you got to stay close to your job. Like you're pretty limited in what you can do. Eh? So yeah, for me, like I moved here after doing my apprenticeship from like 17 to 21. And then I moved here, got a job that allowed me to stay in the country. So I had to stay with him for another 4 years. So like for like 9 years up until like last April, for 9 years, I was just like locked into bullshit.
Wow. What was your apprenticeship in? Yeah, a little.
Okay. Locked into rubbish. Hullabaloo.
Yeah, I probably should have said that. We discourage that, sorry. Because it does go on radio. So,
sorry,
yeah.
My bad.
No, that's okay.
Sorry, I didn't think.
Well, that's all right.
Aussies are pretty loose with their swearing, though. It's not like the UK, like you have a water, what do they call it? The watershed or the water gate or something?
Oh.
Where like you can only swear and say certain words after a certain time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not true, is it?
Why would I make that up?
I don't know. Is that like I would imagine my grandma telling me something like that.
I think that's the thing. Like after like 10 p.m. you can say like the F word or, like, I'm pretty sure that's what it is, hey?
What, on stage or just everywhere?
On TV.
Oh.
TV and radio. Only after a certain time can you swear.
I don't think we've even got that here, yeah. Which would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Nah.
Why?
You should be able to say what you want when you want.
Yeah, yeah, true.
It's very like BBC, UK establishment-esque. You can't say that, young man. You know,
like, nah. Yeah, but I don't want my kids swearing like truckies, you know.
Oh, really? I swear like a trooper, to be honest. I swear all the time. I don't know. Not so much on stage, I think, because I know how much I swear off stage. So
yeah.
I'm trying to think of your set. Yeah, I don't really swear that often. I talk about like dark subjects or blue subjects,
yeah.
But I actively try not to swear as much.
It's actually in context as well. So yeah. If you do, it's not.
I'm not like just going, oh, if and this, but like in real life, that's what I'm.
Yeah, yeah, I can be too, but I choose my audience even in real life.
Yeah, you do that kind of subconsciously actually, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know who you're around and what you can say. Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, very much so. Hey, so what was your apprenticeship in?
I'm a mechanical fitter.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like nuts and bolts and yeah, boring stuff like that. I always hated it, eh?
Really?
Yeah, I kinda hated it like for so long. Like I don't know, it was like one of those things your parents are like, oh, get a trade.
Yeah.
You're too dumb to go to uni. And then I done the trade, and then I always wanted to come to Australia. I don't know why, I just had a gut feeling from like age like maybe 13, 14. So done my apprenticeship, and then I knew I could come to Australia, so I done that, and then locked myself in to another 4 years doing the same job so I could stay in Australia, and then I've just been working like FIFO and yeah, on gas plants and whatnot, just doing bits and pieces, and yeah, it's, I don't know, I really hate like I hate the structure to FIFO stuff, like it's I don't know, there's so many like I don't know, it makes me feel gross, you know? It's like there's like a hierarchy, there's a team leader and a supervisor, and all the guys are fighting because they want to be a team leader because it's like they're in some position of power and they get an extra 16 cents an hour or whatever, and it makes them feel special. Like, and then it's like, you know, I just hate all that, you know? I can't be around that. I'd rather just like go and do a job and bugger off, like,
yeah,
get some money and leave. Like, that's why everyone's there.
Yeah, so a bit of ego.
Yeah, so much ego, man.
Yeah.
People are just swinging in their big egos around. And yeah, I just people, like, you see like a horrible side to people, like people you kind of respect or you like, and then you see how they act in front of certain people and trying to like climb that ladder, and you're like, for what, man? Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's not worth it, eh? It feels gross.
Grant, how have you balanced that up, because flying it's not an easy gig for anyone, I don't think, emotionally. Like, have you managed to, I know that it's impacted you with some of your comedy journey,
yeah,
but relationship-wise as well, like, has that been hard?
Yeah, funnily enough, I always kind of said, like, if I've been single for most of my life, so I've never really, I've always felt like if I meet someone who I actually like, I probably would stop doing that life, and I did, I met someone, so, like, that was a really easy decision. I kind of hit my financial goals with FIFO, which is, like, I suppose reason one why anyone does FIFO. And then number two was like pursue comedy, and then I met someone and I'm like, I should definitely just be in Perfect. Like, it makes life a lot easier and happier, I suppose. And yeah, money's like, I don't know, not everything. Like, half the guys you meet on FIFO are like all ticked up to their eyeballs. Oh. They got like, they can borrow like, they're on like 200 grand a year and can borrow like $1.5 million, so they buy a $1.5 million house and they wonder why they're unhappy. But
yeah,
it's not very smart, eh?
No.
Yeah, and I hate debt, eh? So I'm just like, I'm frugal and I'm chill and I'm just...
I think that's the Scottish in us because I'm the same.
I never knew that was a Scottish stereotype of a Scottish people. Eh?
Apparently it is. I've been told that a lot.
And the guys at work were like, oh, how do you make copper wire? You throw a penny between two Scots. I was like, I had no idea. Yeah. But yeah, apparently it rings true.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the same. I don't like debt and I try to, you know, just live my best. I'd rather have, you know, quality stuff and not have...
like a minimalist lifestyle.
I'd love that. But yeah. I've got kids, remember? So that's a bit...
junk. I've got nothing. Eh? Everything that's ambitious. I own, probably apart from like a screen, fits in my backpack. So yeah, I could... just bail out at any second, I suppose.
Oh, that's great. Mm. All right. So 2015, you came to Australia.
Yep.
And then when did you start comedy then?
Oh, well, I'd done three gigs back home. So okay. I'd done that Red Raw, I'd done the open mic gig, and then I'd done another one a couple of weeks later, and that was equally as good. And like, I was two gigs in, and like both gigs had went really well, even though I wasn't good. It wasn't like funny, but like I watched them back now and I'm like, oh, that is cringe. Then I done my third gig in Scotland, which was like the eye opener, you know, like I'm glad that wasn't my first gig because I probably wouldn't have kept going. It was like in some pub in Edinburgh, and I went down a one way street on the way there and got fined like £250. And then I got there and there was like three people and they were drunk and aggressive, and yeah, I sucked there. And it was brutal.
Wow, that fine should have been the thing that, you know, the universe is saying to you, don't go, Grant.
Like, don't go where?
Don't go to the gig, like, just stop.
Oh, true. You're absolutely right. Hey, you should take signs like that, for sure.
The roadblock, like, just pause.
Take your time if you're late, yeah. Wow, I never thought of that. You're probably right. And then, yeah, so then I moved here in May 2015. I can't remember when I started comedy here, to be honest. Like, obviously I settled in. Didn't have a clue how to like get gigs. I think I emailed like a few of the promoters around Perth, and they every single one of them told me to go to an open mic night in Perth because obviously I wasn't. They were like, "Who's this guy?" Never heard of me, and they were like, "Yeah, try the open mic night because that's where I should have been performing at that point." And then yeah, I went there, but I can't remember when it was. Like it could have been any time between sort of. Yeah, no idea. Maybe anything between August 2015 and like March 2016. I've no idea.
Yeah.
To be honest, eh?
When you first came into the scene in Perth, did you find it welcoming or?
I made a couple of mates and that was like enough. I don't really care if somewhere's welcoming. I don't know. That's not like,
yeah.
I don't know, welcoming. I don't know. Does it need to be welcoming? I don't know. I'm not that interested in like, oh, will you be my friend? Like,
no.
I don't know, probably like, I don't know, maybe I'm more secure of myself than I used to be. Maybe I used to care about that. But nah, I made a couple of mates and it was good enough. I don't know. People weren't like, I don't know. People don't, I always treat people with respect, I reckon. And people always, and I'm kind of open and honest with people. And then they reciprocate that.
Yeah.
Thanks for keeping me verbally alert there. Yeah, so like I've never like experienced like any negativity or that.
Mm.
People have always been like I've definitely had like a shitload of, well, I've had a lot of people saying no to things when I've asked for it. But yeah, I don't know. No one's ever been like non-welcoming. I've never had a bad experience, I don't think.
I always found you and Nick Manese very welcoming. I was talking to you about it before when Nicole and I are very new in the scene and not many people knew us. We were kind of sussing out how to bring Fringe to Kalamunda. And you guys are running the craft and, yeah, used to always say, you know, just come in, girls, have a look and suss us out. It was great, Grant. I really appreciated that time that you guys gave to us.
So. Yeah, we're pretty chill for sure. Mm. But I don't know.
How did you and Nick meet each other through the scene? Was it?
I think this might have been my, can't remember. It was like a gong show, I think. I'm pretty sure it was a gong show. I can't remember.
Yeah.
At the, what was it called? The Elephant in the Wheelbarrow, where the holy moly is now.
Yeah.
And I was on, and there's a comic who used to live in Perth, lives in Melbourne now. And I had like a terrible gig. And I got off stage and he's like, what was that? Rubbish, you know? And then, I just got talking to Nick that day, I think, and went for a kebab and just started having a yarn, but yeah, now he's left.
Yeah, I have had him on the show. We've had a great chat before. Yeah, yeah, when he was in lockdown at one stage.
So. Yeah, right. You probably spoke to him more than me. Jeez, oh, he's dead to me for sure.
Oh. All right, we love you, Nick. So, you know, speaking of bombs, you've had that one. How did you recover? Like, what made you keep going after that, especially if you get that sort of feedback?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why you keep going. I don't know. You're never going to stop just because of one bad one. I mean, it's probably like a ratio, right?
Mm.
If you have like, if you're just starting out and you have 9 good gigs and 1 bad one, that's like, you're probably doing pretty well.
Yep.
I reckon. Yeah, it's probably just a ratio.
Okay.
You probably have so many good times that you go, oh, I can handle that one or two bad ones.
Yeah.
Whereas like some people don't. Some people have the reverse ratio of 9 bad gigs and 1 good one and they keep going. So you probably have to ask them what keeps them going after a bomb like that, or 9 consecutive bombs like that.
Oh, what in your whole comedy career then, what has been probably one of the highlighted worst gigs you've ever done then?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Can't remember, to be honest. I've had heaps. Too many to recall.
All right, what's the best one then?
Best one probably so far maybe would be the Regal Theatre. That's like a standout, I suppose, because there's so many people. That was pretty cool. yeah, the Regal Theatre, there was like 800 people, and that was like, and I'd done really well, so it was like, yeah, no, one to be proud of. But then just in general, like putting on my own show was good. That felt like, you know, because it's like you do it all yourself. You put on the work, you find the venue, you get in there, you promote it, and you do a show that people enjoy. And it got like received pretty well by the people of Perth and Fringe World. So that was cool, putting on my own show. And then, oh, I just remembered my worst show ever. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Tell us.
It was at the Craft in Northbridge during Fringe. I was doing a show with Nick Manise called the Split Bill or a Different Class. And it was like 45 degrees, and the Craft is like outside with no aircon, so it's like horrible. Just ridiculously hot, warm. Everyone's like over it, like not enjoying themselves whatsoever. And like I went out and done half an hour, and just didn't get a single laugh, I don't think. Like in the whole half hour, it was just rough, and it just that was the worst gig ever. Left there just like, wow, like she's like shocked, you know, just like that was horrific. And I felt pretty low for a good day or two. Yeah. And then someone told me that you should only be upset for like 6 hours or midnight or someone. Someone was like, oh, you've only got till midnight to be sad about that, and then you need to buckle up or something. And I was like, nah, I'm going to be sad for longer. Screw you.
Yeah, I'm going to put myself on the lounge and wrap myself in a blankie.
But now there's heaps of good gigs in Perth. Now, Comedy Lounge is like the best place.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's so good, like unbelievable. It's real cool to be able to gig there. And then you got like the Rekabite and the Brisbane Hotel, which is like insane. Like there's just three like top class comedy venues in Perth, which is unbelievable, really. Yeah. And then you've got the Craft, obviously. Don't forget the alleyway in Northbridge. But
Grant's only saying the inner city stuff, so he's scenery.
Oh, yeah,
totally forgetting out of suburbs.
And like, yeah, I think I think Yvonne puts a gig on in Dongara.
Oh, yeah, it might come. Well, hey, the other thing I was going to ask you was, what is one of your biggest influences then?
Influences? I don't know.
Is there someone that you watch in comedy prior to or anything?
Nah, not really. Just, I don't know. I don't watch much comedy. I watch, I don't know.
I actually find it really hard to watch comedy on TV.
Yeah.
Everyone keeps saying watch it, and I'm like, oh, I'd rather watch my sci-fi or, you know, witchy sort of stuff.
I'm not like a big TV guy. Like I'll put like a couple of shows on in the background if I'm doing stuff, and they'll just play through like from start to finish, and I'll probably pay like 7 minutes of attention to like a full 7 season comedy or drama or whatever. But yeah, I don't really watch much TV unless I'm just in the living room, like hungover, I suppose.
Yeah, mine's folding up clothes. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Influences, I've never really thought about that, to be honest. I don't know. Who would an influence be? No idea. I probably pretty boring in that sense. I don't have someone to aspire to be.
That's all right. Hey, you said before your job, the one you did, you said that's a bit boring. In that time when you're in that zone, do you get content coming to you at that?
Oh, yeah, heaps. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're dealing with, yeah, people and you're dealing with, like, people and critical stuff that's maybe important, and you're dealing with, like, people's emotions and, yeah, like, social hierarchies, and you see a lot of stuff that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with people who want to be away from their their loved ones, or you know, there's heaps of people just running from stuff, whether it's debt or an angry wife or kids they can't be bothered to deal with. You know, you meet all kinds up there, like, yeah, and there's a few loonies and heaps of conspiracy theories, and yeah, I don't know, you meet a lot of characters for sure.
I always remember there's an artist called, I think this is his quote, Sean Tan, and he said that he gets a lot of his inspiration for art when he's doing something mundane, so like washing the dishes. So yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know,
doing your actual work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get you. Well, then, yeah, now I'm just working in Perth. It's pretty, yeah, that was the idea, is get a job that's like easygoing and just, I can just sit and think of jokes, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I understand that. But yeah, I don't know. You don't have much time to write or that if you're doing 12-hour shifts for 2 weeks straight. You know, I don't know. It's probably been a bit lazy, but yeah.
I don't think it's lazy. You're fatigued, you know.
You're pretty critical, eh?
Yeah, I think so. Like 12-hour work day. Yeah, how do you mentally switch off and then have time to
be creative? Work, eh? It's not good. It shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
12-hour day, like, not in, I don't know. Everything else in the Western world is so comfortable except working in, like, the industrial area. So it kind of confuses me. Like, you could get three guys in there doing 8-hour shifts. I don't know. These companies make so much money as well, eh?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a bit, like, crazy.
Yeah, all the wages have just went up because of COVID and the borders locked and there's a lack of labour, so the prices have went up. And they've been sitting on this money for so long anyway. Like, they could have paid people this for years, and now they're suddenly like, oh, we'll pay a bit more to get more guys in. It's like, scumbags. I don't want to be, you know, you feel like so... feel like a cuck working for these companies, hey?
Yeah.
Just used and abused. Yeah.
There's more to life, but like you've said before, with money, there is more to life than money, and you've got to have that work-life balance.
Yeah, definitely. Just pay your bills and do something that makes you happy, but I don't know. Like, so many miserable guys up there. Like, I went to the doctors once and I told them I was taking like a certain medication, and he got talking to me about medications and guys in FIFO, and he said something like 15% of FIFO workers are on antidepressants.
Wow.
And it's like, well, you have to take a pill just to go to your work without jumping off a bridge. Like,
yeah, look, I don't imagine it being an easy gig at all. Like, you know, being away from family, being away from friends, and like you said, long work hours.
And then people say, oh, but you're making so much money. And it's like, well, I don't know. I've made like $20,000 in a year, and I've made like a lot, like a significant amount more than that. And it's never, my happiness has never changed depending on how much has been in my bank or how much money I've got to spend. Like, that's such a crazy notion that what goes into your bank is a reflection of how happy you should be. Like, and then, yeah, it confuses me when I hear people say that. Hey, I'm like, you've got no idea.
Yeah, no. And you hope that maybe one day they will get it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Hey, I looked up online. I was just having a bit of a suss of what you're up to.
Oh yeah.
And I've seen that you've got a new show that's out, and it's called Good Dickin Energy. Is that your?
Oh, that was my friend's show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that a show that you did?
I've done that last Fringe.
Last Fringe. Yeah,
it got nominated for the best comedy show.
Yeah.
And then they done away with the awards because of COVID.
Oh, no way.
And I was like, bugger. Nah.
But isn't that coming up in this month as well? You're doing it again?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing it at The Craft on the, all right, here's the promo.
Yeah, do it.
The promo reel. What day? 27th of August, Saturday at The Craft. How much did I take it? $20.
Tell us about the show, Bob.
Oh, the show. Someone once said I had good dick energy, and I corrected them and said I had big dick energy, and he said, nah, it's definitely not. It's definitely not big. And I was like, all right, cool. And I just ran with that as a show title because I thought it sounded good and it would probably sell tickets, and it did. And there's no like revelations about penis envy or explosion of I'm not taking my kit off or anything like that. no one would want to pay $20 for that. It's just a title of a show. It's an energetic show. It's pretty fast paced. There's loads of crowd work and mucking around with people, having a laugh, and that's, I don't know, that's when I'm having the most fun, I reckon, is just bouncing about and being a bit silly and not really thinking too much.
Yeah.
Just being in the moment, I think, is the funniest part, as opposed to like getting too rattled about what the jokes are or where they're going to be or where's this, you know. Some people get really pernickety about placement of one word and then get upset if they don't say that one word, and I'm like, I don't know what that's all about. I'm just out there being a moron. But yeah, that'll be good. Saturday, 27th of August. Hopefully sell some tickets.
Yeah.
Use the code DRN1 so I can see. I don't know if that's a thing. I'll put a code in there.
Yeah, go on.
You won't get a discount. I just want to see if any sales came from this. See if it's worth doing again.
No pressure, guys.
Yeah, so that'll be good. Yeah, 80 seats. Hopefully sell all the tickets.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, and then what other gigs have we got coming up? Greenwood Tavern, I think next Friday, the 13th. Going to be headlining there on last. I don't like headlining. Headline's a weird term. I don't like view myself as that, you know.
What do you prefer, headline or MC?
MC, and man, that's like, I'm good at that. Whereas like, I can, you know, I want to get better before I'd be called a headliner. I'd want to be like, I want to be at a better level. I want to be like more entertaining or funnier or more talented or whatever. But like,
that's a really cool thing to know about, because yeah, like there is a big difference, I guess, with headlining and MC, and you do really good craft work. So
yeah, I can host. Yeah, I'm really good at hosting shows. But yeah, I wouldn't put me on last for half an hour over some of the other acts.
Okay.
Around in Perth for sure. Like, I'd much rather watch them for longer than I'll just do the support or the MC. I know where I'm at.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's great to.
I'm not like, oh, put me up there, I'll do half an hour and then suck. Like, again, some of the acts.
I don't think I've ever seen you suck, by the way. So.
Oh, nah, me neither. Yeah, he's coming to the show 27th. But yeah, nah, hosting the show is much more fun, hey?
Yeah, you're very good. You do have a high energy.
I enjoy it a lot more, and that's what I want to be good at, as opposed to like just going out half an hour at the end. But even if I do a show now and someone puts me on at the end and they say headliner, I'm like, nah, I'm on last.
Yeah.
I'll tell you when I'm a headliner.
I always remember the first time Nicole and I got to meet you, and it was because Tor had a car accident, and she was emceeing for us. So she was in hospital, poor thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's going, don't worry, I've already organised an MC replacement, and it was you. So,
oh, sick.
Yeah.
She's Tor, if you're listening.
She's great, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was our first introduction to you. So
yeah, right. Can't even remember that, eh? Yeah,
that was, well, it was 4 years ago now.
Yeah, so crazy, eh? That's I've never done anything this long. Like, it's like, I did my first gig like 6 years ago, but like really gigging sort of regularly for like maybe 3-4, and then like really taking it seriously only really in the last year. And even then, just like, yeah, some of the people I meet and I'm like, well, I've known you for like 5 years.
Yeah,
like, we're not friends, but I've known you for a long time. But no, there's some, yeah, some of the, you know, I've made some really good mates. I mean, I live with Daniel Delby, who's a comic around Perth, and so like I've made some like really good mates through comedy, and like Nick Manise and Shen and whatnot, they're all like great guys. But I'm not the most social, eh?
You don't have to be.
Yeah, nah, that's the thing I've came to accept, eh? Like, I used to like be like, oh, I'll stay out and I'll force myself to enjoy spending time with 20 people at once, and now I'm just like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go home and just chill.
I'm more into the quality time over quantity time. So, you know, if you get that one-on-one with someone.
Yeah, that's, and I'm like, I'm a little bit, I suppose I'm a little bit socially awkward. So like, if there's like more than 3 people in a conversation, I'm like, you guys are killing it. You just keep going. You got this. You guys want a drink? I'll go get the drinks. You guys look like you're having a good time. I'm just here.
You're the third wheel.
Yeah, absolutely. In every conversation with more than 3 people.
It's all right. I'm really fascinated. Okay, so you on stage, I'd say you're an extrovert on stage. The way that you engage with audience, the way that you hone in on people, you're really good at that.
Yeah.
But out off stage, would you say you're more introverted then?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah, for sure.
How do you prep to get on stage and give that sort of energy then?
Oh, I think it's like people talk about being being on. You know? Whereas I'm only really on stage.
Yeah.
Whereas like some people are on all the time, which is exhausting for everyone involved. Oh, man. Yeah, can't be bothered with that, you know? Some guy giving it his razzmatazz backstage, you're like, ugh. I don't know, chill out, man.
What do you do to prep for comedy then? Like, do you...
Write, and then, I don't know, I don't like... I write a lot, but, like, I never get the benefit of writing out on stage, I don't think. I always kind of... If something's too, like, structured, I feel like I'm, like, just reading lines.
Yeah.
And some guys are really good at... I mean, the best people are probably really good at writing heaps of stuff down and then saying it really freely so that it sounds like it's conversational.
Mm.
Whereas if I write something down, I become very monotone, and then it's, like, it's so, like, the opposite end of the spectrum from where I'm at when I'm performing well, you know? So, yeah, other than that, just, don't know, the car's a good place. Anywhere where you can, like, sit in your own head, I suppose, is a good place to go over your stuff.
Do you say it out loud as well?
Nah, not really. Just in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got, like, a good, like, little voice in my head that, yeah, sounds like me and can tell when something's going to be funny and when something's not. I definitely feel like standing up when you're writing helps me. I feel like maybe I'm more on stage, like I'm like getting into the bit a bit more, you know, like,
yeah,
as opposed to just writing, sitting down or at a table. It's like I can't like feel how that's gonna go down.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have a desk that, you know, is one of the ones that you can adjust?
I just mean like I leave my laptop on a table, but like I'll stand up, think about something, see it, work on it, and then sit down and maybe write again. But yeah. It's more just like it's better to, I don't know, express how it's going to go down, I suppose. I don't like writing in my house either. It always feels like uncomfortable.
Isn't that funny? I don't like being in my house that much either. That's why when we go into lockdowns, I like being out and about and just, you know,
I like being pretty busy and even if it's just like basic stuff, but like just been able to go to the gym or the beach, and winter's like depressing as I hate winter.
Gosh, winter's been full on this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, and like I'm as soon as it's raining, I'm like, oh, like it's just you just want to be able to go outside, eh?
Yeah. What do you recommend for? Well, what would your advice be for someone that is new starting out?
I don't know. I'm probably not in that position to be giving advice, but as soon as you asked a question, I don't know, just gig all the time, eh? It's not that hard. Gig every gig, man. Just say yes to them all, eh? Now I'm kind of at a point where I don't say yes to all the gigs.
Yeah.
Like there's some bad ones and like I'm kind of like, is it worth my time? Like someone offered me like $100 to go do 15 minutes in York, which is an hour and a half away.
Yep.
And I'm thinking that's fuel money. And it's a full Friday night, driving from like 4 o'clock, get there, do the gig, drive home. Like, that's not worth my time. I'd rather just be, to be honest, I'd rather just be on the couch.
Yeah. Like, no, in York's, it's a fair distance.
Yes, it's so far away. So, like, yeah, there's gig. But, like, if I was starting out, I'd be like, oh, that's exciting. Get to go to York and do comedy. And it's, and there's big acts on the lineup. And that would be cool. I'll get to meet this person and do that. And I don't know. But now I'm like, yeah.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. What else? I don't know. That's the only thing I'd say. Gig. Do all the gigs. Even the bad ones. Especially the bad ones. Yeah. I don't know. Be hypercritical.
When you're in Melbourne, did you do any gigs then?
Or? Oh, nah, not really. I've done a couple of open mics and that was it.
Yeah.
This was years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
It was when I first got here. I was going over there quite a bit. And I'd done a couple of gigs. Oh, I went to the festival, didn't I? That was all right. Done a few gigs during the Melbourne
Comedy Festival. Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was good. They were fun gigs. But yeah, other than that.
Well, how did you start becoming more, you know, promoting and doing the craft and all that?
So the craft was like an empty alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked past and we seen it and someone told us about it. And it was, you know, Joe White, it was his sister, said, oh, there's a venue there. And yeah, I won't forget. She said, it's probably too small for us, but you guys should go. Which is very Joe White-esque. I love Joe, man. But yeah, that's him all over. And then So we went in there and we met the owner, Ray, who's like brand new, man, like such a good guy. And we're like, we want to put on a comedy show during Fringe Festival. He's like, sweet. And he was so helpful, man. And we just from there, yeah, just went up and running. We done one show. Like, I think we were doing every Friday, Saturday for the first year. And that's all we done was one show on the Friday and Saturday. And then the next year we went, oh, we could make this bigger and better. And we improved the stage and the curtains and the lights. And then we, what did we do? We put on other people's shows. We let other people do the shows there. And we done our show again. And it was another busy year. And then the following year, we just done other people's shows. And we just done a couple of showcases where we were like emceeing the shows for 10 minutes a night or whatever. And then we were like, oh, we should have done more shows. And then now it's kind of at the stage where we're just putting on our own shows there. And it's, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's going really
good. It's a little alleyway. And it's like, yeah, pretty interesting. Of like,
it's unique, isn't it? Yeah. Like, in terms of, yeah.
And I know it's like a bit, you know, shouldn't, yeah, I don't know. I like talking about money, but I'm also like very aware that some people don't
talk it. I yeah. think
yeah. yeah. So it's like I it's like turned into like such a good little earner, like an alleyway.
Yeah,
and it's like
you do deserve to earn money from your craft. You know that, and yeah. no pun intended there, but
like yeah, I just feel like some people probably go, oh, what a wanker. He's just but like, you know, like that's the word you should use to talk about that. But like some people think that, I reckon, when you speak about money and whatnot, which, I don't know.
No, great. And, you know, one of the things I know that you'll appreciate is how much time it takes to create a show and then promote it, market it, and actually get it all there right to gig time, right? It's so much more involved than what people actually understand.
It's not like you just print a poster from a website and then...
And if you do that, you're going to have, 10 people show up and that's it. But I think, you know, once people understand, and I know you do deserve to earn an income from getting the people.
Sure. Yeah, it's tricky. That's why, it's funny. People talk about pay in comedy. Oh, you don't get paid enough for a gig. And it's like, well, yeah, the promoter's doing like 99% of the work. You're rocking up to do something you enjoy and you've done zero work apart from put your jokes together, the same jokes that you do everywhere else.
Mm.
And then you rock up and you do that 10 minutes on stage, like... I don't know. What do you think you deserve from that? Like, what you get paid is probably pretty fair for what you've done in terms of input to reward ratio, you know? Now the craft, just like an alleyway in Northbridge, and, you know, long may it continue. And if it does for many years, then it'll have made me like a decent chunk of coin from an alleyway, which is mental.
Which in Northbridge, you'd normally recommend people don't go down alleyways. So.
Exactly. So yeah,
it's not a dark one. So
yeah, but no, I'm looking forward to Fringe. Is the best time of year in Perth for me.
I love Fringe,
and especially now that I'm home, it's like I can do other things as well. I can like go over to Melbourne and Adelaide and sort of enjoy myself a bit more and do more shows and branch out a bit and try some different stuff, I suppose.
Fringe for me in Perth, it has got the best vibe ever. Like, you can go into Fringe and when Fringe World's on, and it's just, I don't know, just this happiness everywhere. Yeah, it's like everyone. Yeah.
So it's pretty nice, eh? Yeah. I mean, there's still the typical Northbridge sort of clientele, but there's also like everyone else is there for whether it be like theatre or magic or whatever your shtick is, whatever you like, comedy, burlesque. There's so much cool stuff happening. And it's, you're right. There's like a,
I love that you just said, you know, the typical Northbridge clientele. I've been going to Northbridge since I was 17, 18. I guess the decline, because it was pretty rough back then.
Yeah, right.
Probably the big decline has been, you know, that it, since so many people are on meth. And even like last weekend, Nicole and I, and I don't know, someone did something and I joked to them about it. And I swear his friend wanted to punch my head and I was like, oh, you got like that bad energy.
Yeah, the turbos.
I was like, oh, I was joking, dude. Like, and I said to Nicole, okay, mental nerd, I just don't talk to anyone anymore. Just shut up.
Funny.
Oh, sorry. Okay, family, they're all back in Scotland.
Yeah.
How are they going?
Yeah, they're all right. They're cool. They're all right. Family's all right.
Did they stay sort of COVID safe and all that?
Yeah. They're alive. Next question.
Do you get how do you keep the communication with them?
I just FaceTime. I really only have a good relationship with my mum and dad, I suppose, and I keep in good contact with them. And yeah, FaceTime them, and you know, they're old, so they're always speaking through filters, and it's a total pain in the butt trying to have a conversation with them. And they got kids running around and like grandchildren and all that, and I'm just like, yeah, cool, good chat. See us when you get here in 2042.
All right. What's one of your pet peeves?
People get angry when they're driving. I hate that. I can't stand that, eh?
Well, when they get start to tailgate and...
No. Like, if someone makes a mistake on the road,
yeah,
and that person then gets angry and starts giving the fingers, and they get all... Oh,
puffed up,
F you and all this, and yeah, I'm like, instantly I just go, you are a moron. That's like what I'm thinking, eh, just straight away. Like, if people like can't control their emotions to the extent where like someone, I don't know, like doesn't let them into a space, or you know, and they're beeping their horn, and I'm like, you are just, I hate like stupendously idiotic people. I hate people that don't do their job well in retail. I know people always go, oh, retail got so tough. And it's like, I don't know, man, you're in you're in jeans and a hoodie. How hard can life be, man? I went to JB Hi-Fi the other week to get a watch, like a sports watch, because I'm getting a bit chubby, so I'm trying to monitor my health. And this guy was so, like, he was like the worst person I've ever tried to get help from. And he was losing his temper. And I was only just asking
him. What, with you as a customer?
Yeah, because I was just asking him questions. Wow. And he was getting really frustrated. I don't know, because I knew what he was saying was incorrect. So I was questioning him on a sort of level of having, like, a little bit of prior knowledge. And then I was saying, oh, what about this? And he's probably thinking in his head, oh, this guy thinks he knows everything. And I'm like, well, I know a couple of things, and you've told me it's, you know, wrong. And I've caught him telling me things that are, like, just, like, point-blank lies. He's clearly trying to get rid of me. So I went somewhere else, and I bought the watch somewhere else. But then I was in the shopping centre a couple of weeks later. So I went into the shop, and I started asking them the same questions. I walked in, and I was like, yes, he's working again. This is going to be fun. So yeah, I just went in, I just started asking them questions. Like, I don't know. I'm pretty chill, but like, if people weren't like me like that, I'm like, I'm going to get them back for sure. I'm like, that'll teach you to be a... not nice person.
I love good customer service, right? So if someone does the right thing, of course you're going to go back there. But that's hilarious. They did the wrong thing, so you went back there.
Yeah. I'll get them, man. I was thinking I'll keep going every Friday, but like, that's too much effort just to go in every Friday.
Grant, that's sort of borderline stalking, okay?
It is a bit psychotic, but I mean, I don't know. Find a job you like or quit, or I don't know, go traveling and find yourself. I don't know, he's just annoyed me, man. I'll probably go there every time I'm in that shopping center, eh?
Yeah,
hope he listens. he's like got blonde hair, he works at JB Hi-Fi and Joondalup. I'm coming for you, man.
You're gonna upskill him in customer service. Okay,
that would be a good one as well, actually, to go in there and whenever someone asks him a question, just push him out of the way and say, hey, I'll help you, this guy's actually useless.
It's like you could be like the mystery shopper.
Exactly. Well, I was thinking that as I was leaving. I was like, man, imagine I was.
I know.
He's going to get such a bad rating. That'd be a fun job, I reckon.
It would be a fun job. Hey, I agree.
Just to go in there and be like pretentious or arrogant and just...
Yeah. Try to see which buttons you can push, you know.
Mess with people on a psychological level. Cause them deep trauma they're going to have to deal with in a few years.
I always say to people, you know, when you're wanting to pitch something or practice something, even in comedy, I'm like, you know what? People in the checkout, they're the best. They can't move away from you.
Yeah,
they have to be really polite. They have to smile and nod and go, oh, yeah. You know, they might start checking you out fast.
True, it's a good way to get faster service, hey?
Yeah. So don't go through self-serve.
God, pet peeves. I should really write them down. Material, man. What's some of your pet peeves, actually?
I've got too many.
Yeah?
Yeah, Perth drivers drive me crazy anyway.
Oh, so you're my pet peeve. You're getting angry behind the wheel.
No, I don't get angry. I just don't like bad drivers. So dangerous drivers, the amount of dangerous drivers, you know, like there's a girl that lives, oh my gosh, this is so bad because I reckon everyone would know who she is. She drives like a WRX down Kalamunda Hill, right? And I swear to God, she thinks she's slipstreaming, right? So she's tailgating you the whole way.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, dude,
just chill out.
It doesn't do anything. Like, you know. So she sits on your bum the whole way down the hill. And you kind of go, man, what if, you know, I have to slam my brakes on because, you know, a little quenda jumps out in the road and I'm going to stop, or a little duck or whatever. I'm going to end up with you in my back seat. Like, I don't know. There's just some, yeah. People in Perth don't know how to merge and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Yeah. I don't know. Am I angry? Maybe. I might say, oh, you tool, you idiot. I don't beat my horn unless they're going to crash into me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm not cabling fingers. I'm not chasing anyone.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm that scary back then. Okay. What is something, what's one of your own personal mantras? Do you have any?
Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, that is just. The only philosophy I have to life is don't be a dick, I reckon. And it just works on a universal level. You don't have to be religious or spiritual. Everyone understands that. Just, it would be, I don't know, there's so many dicks out there, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is my mantra. If anyone wants to ever ask me, that's, just be chill, man. Be nice to people. Like, I don't know. Anger, pettiness, I don't know. Can't be bothered with any of that, eh? I'm just chill out, man. Like, yeah, that is my mantra for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And you are really chilled. You're actually, very cool. What about, I know you said you don't watch TV shows. Do you read books?
I read, that's one thing. I always felt like I slacked off heaps as I was younger. And then I always felt like, oh, books, I don't like reading or whatever. And then probably like 3 years ago, I realized you just have to, it's just the same as TV. You just have to, read about something you're actually interested in. Like, you don't just put any series on the TV and go, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. Like, there's some stuff you can't watch, and then there's heaps that you can't read. But I've been reading like heaps in the last year, for sure, buying loads of books. And
what sort of books do you read?
The last book I read was about human design. So I was just like, I don't know, I buy stuff if I'm like interested. If someone speaks about something and I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting, then I'll buy that, and then I'll read about it. And so that was Human Design, which is like a spirituality-based, personality type that takes a reading from, 3 months before the exact time you were born, and then takes the time you were born, and it gives you this character personality, and you've got your personality type, and then you've got these centers and gates within your body and your chakras and all that nonsense, and I read about it and then I'm like, oh, nonsense. But
did you work out yours through that book then, or
heaps? And it was it was pretty interesting. It was telling you, the biggest takeaway for me was from that book, if I was to fully pledge and dive into there, it was to go with your gut. It was saying for me specifically, the type of person I am is follow your gut feelings. Get rid of the logic and the intellect, just whatever your stomach's telling you to do, just go with that. And it made so much sense, because everything I'd done up until this point in my life was gut feeling, moving to Australia and going with comedy, and everything that I've done that was positive in my life, I could directly correlate to having a gut feeling about before I'd done it. And I was like, wow, this is actually,
that's awesome. So you really should listen to
gut. So it was pretty cool, eh? And then other than that, I'm reading a book about neuro-linguistic programming at the moment, which is all about language that your brain uses to sort of connect the dots and work itself out. I like the kind of psychological stuff, I reckon, eh?
Yeah.
Anything to do with your body or your mind or your spirit or whatever, I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Probably all the drugs I've done.
No, it's really interesting. I like all that self-help and self-development stuff.
That's
so
cool, for sure.
Yeah. Mm. I once actually had my Aztec reading done, so it's a similar thing, and I had my they go back into your pathways, and it was really quite funny, because what I got out of that was, the guy said to me, you're someone that has so many random things happen in their lives, and I am, so many random curveballs come, and he said, you've just got to accept that heaps of curveballs are coming your way.
Yeah, right.
And they may change your direction constantly, but just roll with it. And he was right.
Yeah.
yeah, massively. So, I just have to just accept.
There's something to it for sure.
Mm.
What about astrology? Do you get into that?
I used to.
I can't get into that.
Yeah, not so much now.
Whereas that human design thing is probably equally as far-fetched to to most people as astrology is.
Yeah.
Like that human design I could get around, whereas the astrology, I'm like, no, that's, I don't know, it's hippie rubbish. But yeah.
But when you look at it, you know, because it's star-based, I guess, astrology, when you look at it from that sort of side and the history in it, it is interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I probably get more involved, and it will sound hippie, into the moon cycles now, because I always think, you know, when there's a full moon, people can go quite crazy. That's fascinated me for a long time. And, yeah,
my girlfriend's into that as well.
Yeah, there you go.
She'd be like, oh, you know, it's because the moon's doing this. And I'm like, nah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It does resonate with me, a lot of the stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. When she does mention stuff, or when, I might, when people say, if people point it out and go, oh, that's because of this, I'll probably go, oh, yeah, it could be that.
Yeah.
It could be a million other things.
I just find that there's a lot of synchronicities and alignments with it. So, you know, a lot of people might ripple and, you know, and say the same stuff, and you go, oh, okay, well, what's going on here? And
I think people don't like it because they want to be unique as well, eh?
Yeah.
And then they think, geez, oh, turn your phone off, women. And, people like want to hold on to that individuality. So they're like, no way can get around that theory that that they are like not an individual. They're just as like the universe spat them out, and they are who they are because of some higher being. Like, it's almost like believing in a religion in some sense, eh?
Yeah.
I don't really like either, but like, it's interesting.
I guess, I don't know. We've all got our own paths, don't we? And yeah, I've no judgment on whatever anyone believes. Just go for it.
Yeah, nah, same here. I listen to heaps of like, different podcasts as well. And like, loads of comics would probably think I'm an idiot, but like, I like listening to people on the right and the left.
Oh.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like,
So like, if there's something I don't understand or don't get around, I'm like, oh, I'll listen to someone, even if it's something I don't agree with. Like, I listen to people on the right, and then, you know, at least then you can kind of get where they're coming from.
Okay.
Whereas like, I feel like a lot of
Did you think like triggering different parts of your brain through doing that?
Yeah, definitely. Because then you're in those feelings that you don't want to like really feel because you disagree with them so much. I'd rather be there than like just constantly just taking in information from people that's the whole Facebook effect as well, isn't it? Like,
it's
like, oh, you just see what you want to see.
Yeah.
Whereas like, actually you can go out there and there's stuff that you don't want to see, but like, you should get around it because you'll like.
Do you like getting uncomfortable with subjects and then trying to see a different perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I enjoy that for sure.
That's cool.
Because then I'm just like, it does make me feel uncomfortable a lot, but like, it's like, it's good to do. Because like, I think when you're kind of like, a lot of comics are heavily to the left, I suppose, and I'm definitely to the left. But like, I think you realize that like not everyone on the right is like some evil monster. Like, they're just like, most people are the same. They're especially like the extremes. Extremes like actually have a lot in common, eh? But anyway,
no, I think it's really good to get uncomfortable, listen to someone else's, you know, perspective. Don't need to take it on as your own, but you can grow from it.
Yeah, and you can agree with some points and disagree with some points, and definitely grow from it for sure. Yeah. And even listening to stuff I have no idea about as well.
Yeah,
that's a harder one as well, because especially when you try and dive into podcasts halfway through, or like when there's been 100 episodes and you're like, oh, I'll try and get into this, and it's harder when you're not like there from the beginning, I think.
But I love listening to a guy named Joseph Clough, and he's quite a positive. Actually Scottish too.
Oh really?
Yeah. He lived in America now, but I've been listening to him for years. The
Americans got to him, that's why he's positive.
Oh, he's great. He does a lot of hypnosis stuff, and just I love him actually. A lot of good positive talks as well.
So, yeah, right.
Yeah, different perspectives. So
nice.
It is good. Hey, where can people find you on socials?
Just at Grant Mushet on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I don't have TikTok or that. I probably should.
Yet.
But maybe I should put some stuff up there. I'll probably start recording heaps of stuff now and just chuck it online, because like, who cares? People get all worried about, oh, I'm going to burn all my material. And it's like, you've got 10 minutes, man, just burn it. I don't see the issue.
I think different people or different audiences see it on different platforms anyway, or don't see it. So I don't think you're really burning it.
Nah. And like, what? You've got 1,000 followers and there's 2 million people in Perth.
Yeah.
50, however many people in Australia, like 20 odd million. Like, I mean.
And if it gets viral, fantastic.
Yeah, even better. Exactly. There's no, people are precious for sure.
They can be, can't they? NY Events Comedy have Kalamunda Hotel coming up on August 11th, and that's a full lineup of dad comics. And on August 20th, we've got Faulty Towers at the Vault Restaurant. And you can see that on nyevents.com.au. Grant, thank you so much for joining us today.
Us?
Yeah, that's
us. We got into the politics.
Jeez, I know, right? Yeah. thank you so much.
How long did we go for?
An hour. So.
That's the longest conversation I've ever had in my life.
Made it. Congratulations. Yes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks, Grant. See you all soon.
Thank you.